This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Daily Digest on The Bigger Picture. I'm Juliet Jacobs with T. Shawik in the studio with me today. So on today's show, we are going to look at Rosalind Franklin's life, and she is considered as one of the greatest scientists in history, and her pioneering work continues to benefit us today. So this coming Saturday, the 25th of July 2020, marks the centenary of her birth. Rosalind sadly passed away at the very young age of 37 back in 1958. However, despite her untimely death, she achieved so much in her short career that her legacy continues to benefit all of humanity even right up till now. And many people are still unfamiliar with much of her work. But if you do know of Rosalind Franklin, it's likely for her work in the discovery of the DNA structure, the double helix.
Right.
So, but I know some of you may ask, hang on, wasn't it James Watson, Francis Crick and Maurice Wilkins who received a Nobel Prize for the discovery of the double helix back in 1962? Well, for one, Nobel Prizes aren't awarded posthumously. So because Franklin had passed away in 1962, she couldn't be awarded for the prize.
So I think the Nobel Prize process needs to be revisited, but that's another story, I guess.
That's right.
There is another reason behind why Watson and Crick were more famously linked to the discovery of the DNA double helix. So for a bit of a background, Franklin was colleagues with Watson and Crick when she was studying DNA at King's College London in 1951. And it was in May 1951 that she took the picture that would become a world famous photograph 51, which captured the X-shaped pattern of DNA by X-ray diffraction.
And unbeknown to Franklin, photo 51 made its way to Watson and Crick, who were also studying DNA at the same time. So using Franklin's photograph and their own data, Watson and Crick created their own model, which eventually led to the breakthrough of discovering the double helix shape. However, Franklin was more cautious and believed that modeling should be based on airtight scientific evidence. So she took more time to come up to the conclusion of the DNA's structure. Watson and Crick ended up publishing their model first in the Nature Journal in 1953, but gave no mention nor credit to Franklin's X-ray images. That's right. And when Franklin died on the 16th of April, 1958, she still didn't know that her work was used directly in their paper.
Yeah. So here's a short clip from an interview with Jennifer Glynn, Rosalind Franklin's younger sister, where she tells Edwin Sylvester from the Royal Society of Chemistry how unjust that entire situation was.
Well, that of course was, I mean, the Nobel Prizes and all that were 4 years after she died, when it was very easy to ignore someone who wasn't around.
Do you think she was justly treated, or perhaps should there have been
more? I think was unjust was the famous photograph was shown without her knowledge, and it's the fact that I think she never knew how much they'd owed to her. So she wouldn't have felt it unjust because she didn't know.
So the lack of recognition for her work in X-ray crystallography during her brief time at King's, despite the significance of it, is what led to little appreciation for her work and legacy for a long time after her death. But even before her work in DNA, Franklin had already made strides in other fields of science that continue to help us today. So let's take a few steps back and look at the legacy that she's left behind.
Yes, so Rosalind Franklin was born to a well-known Jewish family in pre-World War II London on July 25th, 1920, as we said, 100 years ago on this week. Known in her family for being very intelligent and outspoken, her parents sent her to St. Paul's Girls' School, and that's a private school known for rigorous academics. So here's another clip from the interview with her younger sister, Jennifer, where Jennifer describes what it was like growing up with Rosalind, who was 9 years older than her.
What was she like as a 15-year-old to the young you?
She was a good big sister, but she was working very hard and sort of busy on homework and what was then called matric. That's when I first became aware of her.
I know that you've talked before about her support from the rest of your family. What were your parents like supporting you, your brothers and Rosalind in following through into an academic career?
Well, they assumed we'd all go to university. Beyond that, Rosalind was the only one with an academic career as such, really.
Mm-hmm.
there is a sort of myth that she, they objected to her going to Cambridge, which was is not true. They did feel in when the war started that she should leave Cambridge and do some war work. My father's sisters had done war, been in the land army in the First World War, but she came back to Cambridge with my mother's support very much, and eventually with my father's.
Mm. I understand as well that she wasn't particularly fond of exams to start with. I mean, that's something you've remarked on before.
Well, she was nervous of exams. Who's fond of exams? But she wasn't confident in exams. Mm. Well, wasn't confident of her results, but there was no need not to be confident.
She was particularly apt and able to...
She did very well.
Yeah.
Yes.
Do you know why she chose to sort of follow chemistry particularly? Was that just something she was particularly
just
good at?
Just interested in.
Yeah.
Mm. So no, she was good all round, I think, but that was her interest.
Mm-hmm.
And my brother has a memory of her, which I've put in the book so you can see, developing photographs as a child and having pleasure at what it did. And I think that's maybe a sign of an interest.
Mm.
So I think we can all relate to Rosalind there. Many of us aren't fond of exams
no,
either.
Definitely not.
But I think it speaks a lot to the fact that her family was progressive.
Definitely.
And educated her. It gave her a good education and encouraged an academic career as well.
Expected it almost, yeah.
That's right, yeah. And so from there, her education continued. And when she joined and then graduated from Newnham College at Cambridge in 1938, her research career began in the physical sciences. So her earliest work in the 1940s, including her PhD, involved determining the density, structure and composition of coal, which is a fossil fuel, of course, still used today to heat homes and to power industry. So Rosalind wanted to understand the porosity of coal, mainly to learn how to make it burn more efficiently. But her work also indirectly aided in the design of what would have been the PPEs of her day, World War II gas masks. And that's because coal was part of the design of these masks, and it was knowing about its properties that made it useful in the design. I didn't know that, you know.
Yeah, fascinating. And it was during her study of coal that she became proficient in X-ray crystallography, which led her to work at King's College London. When she left King's in 1953, she went on to Birkbeck College and moved on to the study of viruses, which would fascinate her for the remainder of her life.
Mm.
During this time, she became an expert in viruses that cause both plants and human diseases. So in her 5 years at Birkbeck, she used her X-ray skills to determine the structure of RNA in the tobacco mosaic virus, or TMV. And the virus attacks plants and destroys tobacco crops, hence the name.
Mm.
And at one point, she even corrected James Watson's interpretation of TMV's helical structure.
And once she resolved the question of the structure of TMV, she then set out to study other plant viruses that were affecting agricultural crops of the time, such as potatoes, turnips, tomatoes, and peas. Then in 1957, she began to study the poliovirus because it is structurally similar to the turnip yellow mosaic virus. Unfortunately, luck and time was not on her side, as she was diagnosed with ovarian cancer in 1956, and she passed away just 2 years later at the very young age of just 37. But fortunately, her collaborators Aaron Clark and John Finger, this time around, when they published the structure of the poliovirus in 1959, they did dedicate it to her. So again, in the interview with the Royal Society of Chemistry, her sister Jennifer had this to say.
I mean, people often say, what would she have achieved if she'd not been a woman? But I think the answer is, what would she have achieved if she'd not died at 37?
Yeah, in essence, her work then, as well as that of her collaborators and successors, is why researchers today can use tools like DNA sequencing and X-ray crystallography to study viruses such as SARS-CoV-2.
Mm.
Even just taking her work in discovering the structure of DNA, without it, we might not have made strides in fields such as forensic science, structural biology, virology, and so much more.
Yeah. So the podcast Stereochemistry spoke to several leading scientists in the United States and asked them what the world would look like today if we were still trying to figure out what the structure of DNA was. Here's what Kathy Drennan, a crystallographer from the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, had to say.
Well, the structure really helps us understand how kind of they call the central dogma of life works. Thinking about diseases, genetic diseases, you know, treatments for cancer. I mean, it is the fundamentals of so many things. So the impact would be everywhere.
And the host of the podcast also spoke to Dana Foss, a biochemist at UC Berkeley, who believes that without Franklin's work, research today would be going at a much slower pace.
It's possible that it could have been quite a bit slower because scientists in the field were on the wrong track before Rosalind Franklin's data and her conclusions from her data were shared. So I do think that science would have been slowed down without Franklin's work. And that means that all of the advances that we have today would not be there. And so I wouldn't be working on CRISPR. I'm sure of that. I'm sure that, you know, that maybe would be a generation further away.
So what, I mean, all of this really points to Franklin's contributions to the field of science, not just as a female scientist, but really as a brilliant scientist, that's full right. stop. And, you know, that's kind of what Nature, the journal Nature, was trying to get at when they recently wrote an editorial. And they said that Franklin was so much more than the wronged heroine. And it's time to recognize her for the full breadth and depth of her research career.
Yeah.
And it's interesting, I in my reading, I found out this little bit of trivia that I think because she was so tenacious and her perhaps she had a lot of foresight, and that's what makes a great scientist, right? To ask all the questions that nobody has thought to ask of before. When she discovered the structure of RNA and it was so different from DNA, that apparently the idea was just so shocking and so new at the time that her collaborators stopped sending her plant viruses because, I don't know, maybe they thought she must be wrong. Or she
Good God. Or maybe they were afraid. Who knows?
That's right. And but her discovery of that cements the understanding of virus, the way viruses work today.
Mm-hmm. It's groundbreaking, you know. Mm-hmm. And it's not. And we shouldn't be framing her as all female scientist. She was just a fantastic scientist.
That's
you
right.
Know?
Yeah.
Just... I can't even say alive at the wrong time because, you know, we're still seeing those sorts of issues today.
Mm.
You know, lots of women, I remember we've done stories and I've read so many articles about women scientists who feel that they are often overlooked because their male counterparts, you know, their suggestions, they're the ones usually called to attend conferences or
right.
whatever. And I remember reading about this one woman scientist who attended a conference with experts all in the field, and there were only two female scientists present mm-hmm. among like hundreds of other male colleagues.
Yes.
And that got her to actually start one of the largest databases, which is called Request a Woman Scientist.
Yes, I've yes? used that. Yes,
yes,
it's brilliant. Yeah,
yeah,
and you were the one who introduced it to our team, actually.
That's right. And it has like over 8,000 scientists, mm-hmm. I think, from over 133 countries. And mm-hmm. but again, you know, it was women having to make that initiative. But you know, at least they did it and got it going, and it's wonderful.
Yeah, and we're still seeing instances of women scientists being suppressed, right? And in today's modern age. So back in 2015, Tim Hunt, another Nobel Prize winner for whatever that's worth, said that scientists should work in gender segregated labs because the trouble with girls is that they cause men to fall in love with them, and quote unquote, when you criticize them, they cry.
Oh, I remember that so clearly. The fallout was catastrophic for him, but
I don't know though. If it's catastrophic for him, if it was, why does this behavior still persist, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And why is our women scientists' work still not being recognized on the same level as their male counterparts? Why don't they have as much of a voice? And there's a lot of structural, societal challenges as well, right?
Yeah.
Because they're expected to be the domestic, to bear domestic responsibilities at home. So I guess it makes them... difficult for them to advance in their career if they had to juggle both.
That's right. I was actually reading about another woman scientist. She was an astronomer, and she was saying how she wasn't given even things like maternity leave. So, you know, research wouldn't come her way, you know, from her male supervisors because she would be gone for like a few months.
Right.
You know, so there were all these sort of, like you said, structural things, structural impediments in place, mm-hmm. you know, that prevented them from advancing in their careers or you know, achieving what probably their male counterparts did.
Do you think that Rosalind Franklin would have wanted to be born a male scientist?
Oh, I wouldn't even dare make the assumption, but... possibly. I mean, it would have been a very different sort of situation for her, I imagine.
But then perhaps she was brilliant because she was a woman. I mean, perhaps
perhaps knowing that society places more barriers for women made her more persistent, right?
Perhaps.
Made her push even harder.
Yeah. I don't know, but judging from her background, her family background, I suspect that was just something that was part of their DNA.
Perhaps, yeah, good one. Perhaps. If you want to do something, you just put your mind to doing it, right? Regardless of your sex.
And that is definitely what she did, you know, right up till her very untimely death. Mm-hmm. And I think this is just a side note that we should also point out. James Watson actually was widely criticized for being racist and sexist. Mm-hmm. And he sounds like an all-round horrible person, really. So, for example, he has suggested and implied that people of black descent are less intelligent than whites. In his book, The Double Helix, he actually described Franklin as a quote-unquote belligerent, emotional woman unable to interpret her own data and called her plain dressing.
Excuse me, he stole her work. He didn't give her. I mean, I'm sure she was interpreting her own data. It's just that Watson and Crick, they essentially stole, isn't it? When you use someone's work without crediting them and you take the credit and get awarded for it.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, you stole her work.
Exactly, you're a thief. And I mean, again, going down to things like calling her plain dressing, what has that got to do with anything? And this is so typical, that stuff that we see even today.
Yes, and we just talked about harassment of women, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Putting them down, attacking them, not on the basis of merit or their work or their efforts, but just because they're female.
Yeah, it's because you can't criticize them for their work, so let's ridicule the way they look and hopefully make them feel bad mm-hmm. about themselves.
And undermine them.
And undermine them in all these different ways.
Well, happy 100th birthday to Rosalind Franklin. I think there's a lot more awareness of her role in science today. Just a few years ago, Google actually released a doodle celebrating her.
Uh-huh.
So I think it's these kinds of little things that will hopefully put the light on our female scientists who sort of didn't get the limelight then, but we can still celebrate them today.
Definitely. If you do a quick Google search, which is what I did, it's just women scientists wronged by men. And I kid you not, the amount of responses, the amount of pages that come up. So go do some reading. She was not the only scientist. But the good news is, you know, a lot of male scientists are discovering their own unconscious bias and trying to get their female colleagues, mm-hmm. you know, more recognized as well. So mm-hmm. there is some hope there.
That's right.
I'm afraid that's all the time we have for today's show. But if you'd like to send us any message, you can always tweet us at BFM Radio or send us a WhatsApp message at 018-789-8899. If you'd like to drop a message to the Bigger Picture team, just look for us on Facebook, search for BFM The Bigger Picture, you'll find us there. If you miss any part of the show today, you can download the podcast at bfm.my/dailydigest. You can find us on the BFM app or on Spotify. Coming up at 3 p.m. on Front Row, it's another episode of By the Book with Sharmila Ganesan and Lee Chui Lin. And today they will be discussing the life and work of Jane Austen and also modern interpretations of her work. So that's coming up after the 3 p.m. news. This has been The Daily Digest on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.